And there was a good run of Phil Donahue jokes, and I'm always here for a Phil Donahue joke.
Everybody, you're Sorkin in it. It's Studio 60. Please take just a minute. It's about a show, kind of like SNL, but it only lasted one season. Oh, well, we're Sorkin in it.
This show uses a cold open every week. Studio 60 focused on it just this week. Hi, welcome back to Sorkin in It. I'm Lex Friedman.
I'm Brian Warren.
And today we are indeed discussing Season 1, Episode 2 of Studio 60 on the Sunset Strip, The Cold Open. And Brian, you may recall before we even dived into this series, I told you that I objected to an episode at first. I thought it was the pilot, but it wasn't. I objected to the cold open scripted and executed in this episode for one primary reason. Do you remember the thing I don't like about the cold open in this episode?
Everything?
It's not funny. I have lots and lots of thoughts about it. And we'll go deep on it when we get there. And ironically, I guess you could say, the cold open shows up at the end of this episode. But Brian, what was your overall take on season one, episode two?
Well, you know, I was bracing myself for the actual cold open. So I kept expecting it to come sooner and I kept expecting to be like annoyed. And I don't know, I was really just, it was a whole episode of like anticipation. And then it finally happened. I was like, oh, okay. But as a second episode goes for a show like this, I think it's pretty good. But yeah, the song, we'll get to the actual cold open song eventually, but yeah, pretty good.
I thought the episode was good, but not great. I thought it was not as good as the pilot. I thought it's, again, it's a show that feels, like we said from the pilot, like so rich and storied already. Like it's got some deep history. There's a lot of stuff going on. This one felt in some ways, some of the plotting I thought was stupid. And some of the stuff I thought was great, but I really did like it. Should we do our thing? Should we go beat by beat through the show?
Yeah, let's do it.
We open with the press conference. I actually had many issues with the press conference scene. I liked the dialogue in the scene, but like the staging of it seems so weird. Why wouldn't she be at the podium?
Yeah.
Is she wearing a wireless mic? How is her voice carrying?
Felt very CJ, like with Danny watching on the monitor and saying, oh, she's doing good. She's doing good. Just like Josh Lyman or somebody else might be watching in the closed circuit television in the White House of CJ doing her, you know, it felt like Sorkin was maybe leaning a little bit too on stuff that worked from the West Wing.
This is a different show, right? But we live in the real world. He knows most of us who know him have seen that other show. He's using the same font from the other show. He's using actors from the other show. Like, you know, it could have been executed differently. Could have been, you know, but I get what he was trying to tee up and was this protest, although the protest seemed to be borderline meaningless, but it was mostly about this whole plot line is about showing how cool Jordan is and her relationship with her boss. And I never know what her boss's name is. Like I know the actor's name, but I don't know the character's name. And I didn't even look it up.
Jack Webb.
Yeah, that sounds good.
I don't know. I feel like it's Jack Weber, but it's not because it's
Jack
Weber.
Rudolph. Jack Rudolph. Okay. I don't know. I thought Amanda Peet was great in this episode as Jordan. I thought she was especially beautiful throughout this episode. I mean, she always is, but I kept noting it. I don't know. So I like I said, I like the writing of the scene, but not the execution of the scene.
Yeah. It got a little better when it was the three of them on the stage or whatever, the podium, like, and people asking questions. And obviously Matt, who is like the arguably a little bit more of a screw up than anybody else, like, he was the only one who was really holding it together. I don't know. There were some funny jokes there too, but it did seem kind of weird where they were doing the whole thing.
I did enjoy Danny Bradley Whitford being like, oh yeah, the reason I'm not doing movies is because I relapsed on my drugs and stuff, which was clearly not what he was supposed to say. And then he's like, yeah, I said it. Deal with it. I told the truth. I also enjoyed, I think it's sometimes I write down dialogue and I don't write down who says it. Most of the time I catch myself, but I wrote down, I made a decision for you. You'll find I'll be making a lot of them. That felt very Sorkin-y and very West Wing even. I didn't look it up, but I'm guessing that quote has been said on other Sorkin projects.
Sure,
but I think it's Bradley Whitford to Matt. But I enjoyed a lot of that, the early scene when it's just Matt and Danny. One of them refers to Ricky and Ron as Dick and Dick, and I thought that was pretty great.
Those and, two, Matt and Danny, have great charisma together, or chemistry.
They do.
I enjoy the one-on-one convos with those two.
I totally agree.
When they were chatting, someone said, they were talking about The Office, right? Like who takes Wes's office. And someone said, I'd rather sit in Lorne Michaels' office. So the question of whether Saturday Night Live exists, it does exist.
I have pages of notes about this. I won't read all of them to you or our listeners. But okay, what it means is Saturday Night Live exists in this world. And the fact that Saturday Night Live exists in this world means that this show is incredibly derivative, right? Studio 60 ripped off everything from SNL, the entire format of the show, including a news section in the middle,
yep,
the musical guests, the hosts, starting with the cold open, the way the cast works, the way the music of the show feels. Like, the fact that this that SNL exists in this universe, I think is fair, but it makes Studio 60, the show within a show, atrociously derivative. Like, and you could say, well, SNL is ripping off SCTV or what was the Friday show, but not the same. Like this is just a blatant ripoff. And I was like, all right, fine. But
and SNL's been around for 40 something years now. Studio 60's only been around for 20 years, so it's midway through the life of SNL so far. NBS, right? Which I guess coexists in a world where NBC exists that SNL's on. So NBS says, yeah, there's room for one more of these things. And they decide to make their own.
And like, even when you think about Mad TV, it wasn't live and it wasn't the same thing. Like it was a different format of the show. So I don't know. It's pretty hilarious to me. But also that we kick off the plot line that I found the least interesting of the episode, which is that, and this is, I think, why Danny said I made a decision for you. But Jeannie went home with Matt. Danny had Jeannie go home with Matt when Matt was a little bit drugged out. And it turns out that Harriet and Jeannie are friends. Jeannie's another castmate on the show. Harriet says to Jeannie, I wish I had a body that looked like yours. And Jeannie says, I wish my talent looked like yours, which is a weird thing. I can't imagine ever a comedian already on the show saying that to another comedian on the show. Like, you can love them, but come on, you're, you're on the show. There's that whole plot line at the press conference. I know we've moved past a little bit, but like of Constance Zauer from Rapture Magazine asking questions about Crazy Christians and like, it's going to air, don't worry about it. And so some networks aren't going to show it, but like, I don't know. That whole thing felt, that was the other part that felt silly, but I love, like, we're not supposed to like Steven Weber. Like, he's difficult. Jack Rudolph is difficult to his team, but he is so funny.
Yeah.
In that scene after the press conference, he's like, no one speaks until I point and say their name. I want that to be the rule wherever I go as well. I just pointed at Brian, so he knew.
Okay, I'm allowed to talk. Thank goodness, finally.
I also appreciate Jordan is one of those, like, it makes sense that Matt would make jokes. He's a writer on a comedy show.
Yeah.
But Jordan is also just a person who makes jokes, and I love that. Mm-hmm. Jordan is just, Jordan's funny. I like that.
One of the things, as we're kind of moving through some of these early interactions, there's a fair amount of like tension in the cast, right? We have like Danny going and meeting the cast, and then there's also Matt going and meeting all the writers. And in both of those situations, these clowns are coming in from somewhere else and they don't really know everything that we know. And there's kind of some grumpiness going all around, right?
Yeah. And these folks have been at the show, but they left the show. And I think that's some of the tension. I loved this moment where Danny says, do you want me to go put him at ease for you? And as soon as he said that, I was like, oh, I can't wait to see how he's going to put him at ease. And I thought he was going to go in and just fire all the ones that he was allowed to fire. And he didn't. He was just a jerk to them.
Yep.
And Matt's like, well, thanks for putting him at ease. And then he gives his own little pep talk. There couldn't be a worse possible time not to be good at this, this being writing the show. Mm-hmm. And then we go, like you said, we go to the actors. And Nate Cordry is reading a review where it says, Studio 60 seldom rose to SNL at its best. Any review of a late night show that's in part praising SNL is hilarious to me because the reviews of SNL are always terrible. And then what does DL Hughley tell him? What does Sim tell him? Stop reading the internet. So Sorkin still hates the internet and its reviewers. Good to know. I did have a moment while we were watching some of the stuff behind the scenes in the dressing rooms, I guess. I remembered this from my previous watch through of the show. The dressing room sets are really dimly lit to me. And I found that weird then, and I find it weird now. Maybe it's a weird thing to get hung up on, but I do get hung up on it, Brian. And I get hung up on it in part because when you're in your dressing room, you want to be able to see every pore. Like, you care about what you look like. And it's weird to me that it's like, it feels like the dreary part. It's like their equivalent of the bullpen in the West Wing, but the bullpen in the West Wing was fluorescent, bright lights all over the place. And here it's just like, it's just dim, and I don't get it. I don't know why it's happening.
In the bullpen, it was fluorescent lights, but everybody's office in the West Wing was like, no. It was almost like at twilight at all the time, and you could barely see anything inside those offices.
Yeah.
But it's true. Like, none of them were applying makeup at the time. So,
yeah, I thought it was, really odd. And, I remembered it bothering me before, but, instantly we get Jeannie saying that something about Matt doing leg lifts, and already I'm like, uh-oh, somebody's going to put together later, how does Jeannie know about Matt doing leg lifts? Mm-hmm. They're going to figure out that she spent the night there. And then she doubles down on it, and she makes it really obvious, and she's like, oh yeah, well, I was there. Like, she has no self-awareness at all, and that's dumb. I forgot that they call Simon Sim. I've never known a Simon who went by Sim, so I think that's weird. Mm-mm. And then, how did you feel about Harriet needing to walk away, and B, feeling the need to ask Danny first if she was allowed to walk away after hearing that Jeannie had spent the night with Matt?
Oh, right. She kind of asked to be excused from the meeting.
Yes.
It felt kind of forced, I suppose. I appreciate if people are having a really intense meeting, like saying, excusing yourself, like saying, oh, I got to run, I need some time or something, like, or I have a conflicting meeting or something. That's all fine. But like asking permission to leave the table seemed strange.
Yeah.
The posture there is weird.
And then back to Matt with the writers, I was really glad that they revisit this moment, because there's this whole thing where he yells at them for how they're dressed. Like, they're going around the room, they're giving him pitches that he doesn't like. A lot of them are not funny. I'm with him. But then he's like, why are you all dressed like this? Like, what's going on? And then later he's like, I think I yelled at them, because I was like, why? First of all, why is he in a suit?
Mm-hmm.
Like, I don't think you go to SNL or Studio 60 to write in a suit, no matter what. Even if you are, like, maybe Lorne Michaels wears the suit, but his head writer doesn't.
No,
I don't know. I felt, and I bet Lorne Michaels wears a freaking sweatshirt some days. I bet he does.
Yeah, he wears a suit to on Saturday nights. You know.
Yeah.
That was weird. I clocked the suit thing too. It did look like Matthew Perry had walked off the set of The West Wing and into the set of this. It's probably trying to other Matt and Danny to make them look like they don't belong there, in the same way that so they were walking off of some other more higher paying job or some fancier job, and then now they're slumming it with these folks. But I do appreciate, and I remember it at the time when he was reflecting on it, saying like, I can't believe I just yelled at them all for what they were wearing. That was felt a lot more human and less scripted.
Yeah. And then we get a lot of strange moments to me, and I didn't mind them, but strange ones. First, Harriet comes, like, he says, we're going to behave professionally, and then instantly that perfect Sorkin beat of Harriet bursts in and says, you oversexed something whoremonger.
Yeah.
I feel like Sorkin really likes oversexed as an adjective. Mm-hmm. I don't think even Matt's wrong. Like, I think Matt's sometimes wrong, but in this exchange where he's like, don't come in and talk to me that way in front of the team. Of course she can. Like, this is a workplace and he is the boss. Like, you can be mad at him all you want, but you got to do that privately. And he's like, I'll make you the highest paid extra or the most overpaid extra in the world. I'll pay you to wave and say goodnight. Another thing our show ripped off from SNL is waving goodnights at the end. Like, let's do exactly the same show. It's a mistake that they acknowledge the existence of SNL, Brian. It's a mistake. He says, it's not your show, it's mine, to her, because she's like, don't do this at my show. And he's like, it's not your show, it's mine. Like, okay, that's rough. And we find out that Harriet broke up with him via email.
Yeah.
But I did enjoy, and so I like, again, it's all surprising to me, but I liked how it went. It's just, it was a lot. And there was a good run of Phil Donahue jokes, and I'm always here for a Phil Donahue joke.
He's talked about him being like a ripped Irishman or something, right? Like,
yes,
that he could take him.
But I don't know, I liked all of that, and like there's a lot there to their breakup. And although I couldn't read my notes for a second, which are typewritten, so that's how bad it was. But Harriet's like, you know, I have a great imagination, which is weird. So you knew I was going to find out, and then I would have this in my imagination. That's just mean. There are so many better ways to present this. Like, because I'm a comic actor, I have a good imagination, which makes it worse that you are going to make me think about the fact that you slept with another mutual friend of ours, is a very weird way to express that hurt.
Right. And I guess you can hurt people who have poor imaginations. I don't know. The inverse does not work in that situation. That it's like, only be really careful around people who have imaginations. Otherwise, you can say whatever you want. No, that's not cool. Yeah. So it does feel a little weird.
Yeah. So weird. I really struggled with that moment.
I liked the whole White Stripes thing. Jack White gets tonsillitis partway through the week, and then some of the jokes that they were going to put together fall apart. I like just little bits of mechanics about putting on a show like that, and that they're trying to, that forces them to try to think of something else to do for music, which is kind of fun.
Agreed. I even enjoyed like I liked all the backstage banter with the actors where they're like, oh, Harry, it was great in that sketch. But, and then what's Nate Corddry's character's name?
Tom Jeter.
Right. And Tom's like, thanks. Cause they didn't compliment his work in it. I love all that. Mm-hmm. I like Danny saying, I don't mean to be mean, but it's a lot of lovers quarrel drama early in the show.
Yeah.
So I don't know. And then we find out that Jordan can't do names any better than President Bartlett could, which I appreciate. Like, I like that as a little bit of a runner. And I like that she's like not going to cut Crazy Christians because an affiliate didn't like it. And she's like, it's my first promise I made to them. And, you know, you got Jack doing like break. And she's like, no, I'm not gonna. And again, like I said last week, this is a, to me, strong Sorkin character, because this is a woman who is super confident. And like, mm-hmm. we don't even have, sometimes I think you could see a moment where you could see that she's nervous behind the scenes. Like she's like, oh, I hope this works out, but she's not that. She's just like, we're going to go for it. Like, and I love that. Mm-hmm. I love that she is just confident. It's pretty good.
Yeah. She's cool. And it's fun to watch her work. And you assume that there's like a little, and we'll get to see more of it. There is a softness to her that just makes her even more lovable. But also like she's got it together in ways that even like Bartlett didn't always come across that way too. The first time we meet Bartlett, like he's totally got it all together. And there's times when he kind of leads, but and casts a vision. But watching her kind of have these one-on-one moments and stuff this early on in the series is pretty cool.
Yeah, I totally agree. I was a little upset at the dynamic between Danny and Sim. Like, I thought it was fine writing, but Danny and Sim are mad at each other, and they don't ever actually resolve it. And I don't know if it remains a plot point later in the show or not. It very well may, because they make a pretty big deal out of it. But Sim had been trying to blow up Danny's spot a little bit when he was meeting with the cast backstage, and so Danny's calling him on it. And Sim is like, you want me to be grateful because you're slumming it here? we learn that Sim is mad that Danny quit the show and like abandoned them. And like, Sim's like, I stood by the show. And I think they're both fine. Like, you can leave a show if you want. You can stay by the show if you want. But it's, And then we see that not only have they ripped off every single thing that Saturday Night Live does in a world where Saturday Night Live exists, Matt uses the same pushpin board that Lorne Michaels does to organize the show for Saturday Night Live with the same color index cards. You know this about me already, Brian, but I love writing about writing. And so I love when we get to see some of Matt's process of how he's thinking about writing. I love that with Toby and with Sam Seaborn. So getting to see, you know, Matt think out loud with everybody accurately encouraging him. Like, you know, you get Danny being like, so what does that mean? And you get some of the actors chiming in because they're writers too. But he's like, it's got to be self-deprecating. It's got to be acknowledgement. It should be a big song. It should be a musical number. It should pay respect to the blah, blah. And I think it's Sim who says, we'll be model citizens. And that's the fire that Matt needs to come up with his parody of the Pirates of Penzance.
There's a moment where someone says something. I can't remember exactly what it was. Is when they catch on with the model citizens that Cal laughs, and it's like a half laugh. He's like, huh. And then it's like, oh, there's an idea here. That was great.
Yes.
I loved it. And I love that Cal's in on it too, because Sim, big fan.
Sim comes up with the line, we hope that you don't mind that our producer was caught doing blow, which, as we'll get to, is the only funny thing in that. Well, it's one of three funny things. And so one of the three funniest things where we're supposed to think, wow, Matt's so great, came from Sim. He wrote one of the three funny lines in that song. We'll get back to it. I could do an entire podcast series, like a 12 episode series dedicated to this cold open and how it's poorly done, but we won't. We're going to do it all in this episode. But before we get there, I like when Matt's like, while you're trying to find a different musical guest, we also need like a philharmonic, we need an orchestra, we need a choir. And the woman says, is this a joke? And Danny says no at the same time that Matt says, we're counting on it. And I like that they're both answering accurately. I love that. Yep. And Sim and Danny's makeup is, listen, forget it, let's work. Okay, great. Mm-hmm. But then we get to, it's the night of the broadcast, the live broadcast. And we have a news reporter saying, please estimate the protest size at 200 to 300. I hate moments like that. Because one, there are not 200 to 300 people there. And two, if it's 200 or 300 people, you don't need the police to give you an estimate. You can see if it's 200 or 300 people. Yeah. Like, they're news anchors. It's such a small moment, but it just feels, it feels like the fake, like, it makes it feel so fake to me. Like, yeah. That's not how the news would report it. They don't need the police. You need the police if it's 2,000 people. You can't see 2,000 people at once. But 200 people, you can count them. They're yeah. right there. I don't know.
And we,
it just made me mad.
And everything from like when they were showing the outside with the protesters and stuff, all that looked fake too.
Yes.
And really, there were maybe, what, 30 people there, tops?
Right. Like it was just so silly. Yeah. And like, who cares if there's protesters? I don't know. Mm-hmm. It was just dumb. And then... there's this exchange between Danny and Matt, and it takes us a minute to realize where we are, I think, at least it did for me, that they've already had a dress rehearsal and it's already gone great. Mm-hmm. And like it takes a couple of minutes to hear that. And it's just so odd to me that, that they give Danny the line, could you be just a little more Jewish? Because Matt is being so neurotic about, you know, it's going to be blank again in a couple hours as soon as the show's done. But like, is Matt supposed to be Jewish? And what's worse? Like, I'm not offended, but it just seems like a weird thing to say. Like, a Jewish friend, and I know that Bradley Whitford is Jewish. I don't know if Danny is Jewish. If Danny's Jewish and he's saying it, whether Matt's Jewish or not, yeah, all right, fine. Could you mm-hmm. be more Jewish? Mm-hmm. Fine. But, like, I don't know. That line really bothered me. Not because it offended me, because it felt unearned.
Yeah. If they're both Jewish, is it better? I don't know.
I don't know.
But yeah, the fact that we're still kind of trying to figure it out means that the joke fell flat.
It fell flat, exactly. I do enjoy where Danny's like, I need you to tell me, Matt, if like this Harry thing's going to be a problem. And he's like, no, I'm not in love with her. I just love every single thing about her. And Danny's like, oh my God, we are so screwed. And Matt's like, yep. Like, yes, I tried to cover it, but nope. How did you feel about the makeup scene between Harriet and Jeannie?
Did not like it. I mean, I appreciate that they're honest with each other, I guess. I don't know, the knocking the bottle on the head and it cracking, like that felt goofy to me in a way that the scene didn't really make sense. They weren't being goofy with each other.
Don't waste breaking prop bottles for yeah. one. And there's still stuff to clean up. It still hurts a little bit. Like it's not nothing. It's not sharp, but it's still a thing breaking on your head. It's not great. And I agree. It felt goofy and like, I don't know. I thought they could have done a little bit better there. I do appreciate we get a moment with Sim where we now know why Danny was mad at him. Mm. Because Sim had said a year into the show, I just graduated from Yale Drama. I don't belong here. And yeah. Danny was offended because Danny does belong there. And Sim's like, yeah, I was wrong to say that. And, I enjoyed Sim not being able to do voices, and that is a thing, and him trying to do
using Bill Cosby.
Bill Cosby voice. Can't fault him for using Bill Cosby then.
Nope.
But I thought it was really funny. I thought it was odd that like the prize is, Danny says, you're going to start co-anchoring the news next week. Mm. Because I do think that feels like a great use for him. But it's a little funny that they're like, we're going to have our big new takeover of the show, and then the week after we'll change another thing. Like, I get it, there's only so much you can do at once, but it feels a little odd that we missed it for this episode.
In those kinds of conversations, I always wonder, was he planning all along to give him this prize, or was he planning all along to and he was actually coming to this meeting with him to let him know that, or was it I feel guilty because of the way that we had our interaction and I'm feeling kind of crappy about it, what can I do to solve this, I'll just give him something? And
I think neither.
I hope it's the former.
I think neither of those.
You don't think so?
I think it's a third thing. I think maybe at some point he's thought about this idea that he could have Sim host mm-hmm. the weekend update segment. But I think that in the conversation, when he's realizing what Sim's concern is, he's thinking in real time, That's not Sim's highest best use. Sim doesn't belong in sketches doing voices. But what Sim is so great at is, I don't know, talking or political commentary or whatever it is that makes you think somebody would be good for the news. Like, not Jimmy Fallon. But I feel like even if he had the germ of the idea, he decided in that moment because he realized, no, we have to use Sim the way he should be used, which is he should be our Jon Stewart. That was my take. But who the hell knows?
Yeah.
We could call up Aaron. Do you think all the network execs stand around watching Studio 60? Was it just because it's their first episode back after the whole thing?
Maybe because the first episode back. There's no way they watch it all the time. Maybe Jack Rudolph does, but I doubt it.
I enjoy all the Jack and Jordan scenes. You got Spunk. I hate Spunk. And she's like, we're going to charge a coward fee. If they want to come back on and buy more ads after they cancel their ads, they have to pay 120%. I was like, yes, girl, get it. I actually also really enjoyed the runner of Matt's obsession with the audience being hot and sticky, because I totally, totally get it. And I totally appreciate that he was worried about it. I would have been one of those hot and sticky people in the audience. They could laugh less. I wish he had said, so you have to be extra funny. Like, didn't just share the problem with the cast or whatever. But what'd you think? Were you surprised, as I was, that I think it was either Matt or Danny who said, whose turn is it? And it was Harriet's turn. And then Harriet leads them all in a pre-show prayer.
That was weird to me. Yeah.
It was like suddenly we entered a different TV show.
It did. It did. It felt out of place. They're really hanging a hat on
Harriet's religiousness.
Yeah. Harriet's religiosity, or her devoutness or whatever. As someone who's religious myself, I still find it very uncomfortable.
I don't know. I think that we're somewhere between normal and different from normal in terms of our, I think, awareness and appreciation of the backstage stuff and Hollywood stuff and entertainment stuff. We've both been attached to that world in different ways. But, like, the whole cast gearing up to pray before a live show did not feel like the Hollywood I know and understand. I have been in shows with religious casts. Some of the cast gets together and prays. Not all of them. It's not by default. And certainly, when there's Jews around, it'd be very uncommon for me to somebody say, in Jesus' name, amen. Like, again, I'm not offended by it, but, like, that's not an inclusive way to do that prayer.
Yeah, and I was looking for it. I was like, well, maybe they won't.
And it's Hollywood. There are Jews around.
And it wasn't everybody in the cast, right? Like, everybody in the cast probably is. There were, what, maybe a dozen people tops around that thing?
I thought the whole cast of this show within a show, I thought was around 8 people. Oh, okay. I thought we were seeing the whole cast.
More. Okay. In that case, yeah, maybe it was everybody.
It felt like everybody. I don't know. But it's a good question. I did enjoy very much, actually. At first, for a second, I didn't like it, and then I rewound it. I was like, no, I do like this. I did enjoy the exchange between Harriet and Matt over what went wrong, where why did Harriet get a laugh when she asked for the sugar in the table read, but not get the laugh when she asked for the butter at dress rehearsal? And Matt's like, you asked for the laugh at dress. And she's like, what'd I do with the table read? And he said, you asked for the butter. And I like, one, that he knows. I like, two, that she knows what that means. But most importantly, I like that, like, that's exactly the right answer. You don't ask for the laugh. Yeah. You got to just you got to commit to the bit. I like that was the answer. It was good.
That moment, probably more than the musical part itself, shows Matt's acumen at writing. Like, that was, and his just awareness of what was going on. It was cool.
I loved Cal messing with Danny right before the live broadcast. So there's a fire. We're only going to have one camera. Loved all that. And I thought that we were going to end the episode with, at this moment when we're seeing the clock, the countdown clock that's in there, I thought we were going to end the episode with Matt pushing a button to reset the clock, but that wasn't the actual episode ender. We saw it a little bit earlier. It resets by itself, whatever. But now we get to the cold open, Brian. I'm a student of parody, I would say. I'm a fan of parody. The biggest issue to me with this song is that they keep repeating the not funny lyrics. Will be the major model of a modern network TV show or something like that, whatever it is. Will be the very model of a modern network TV show. Maybe that's what it is. That's not funny. That's that's the business you have to get through to show here's the song we're parodying. But they keep repeating that. And if that's your chorus, if that is a repeated lyric, then you do what Weird Al does. You change the chorus each time so you can find more ways to have jokes. If you're going to repeat the thing, it's got to be funny. If it can't be funny, then you do a different set of lyrics so you can keep having jokes. the only jokes I noted were that Hobie Dunn Minor producer is caught doing blow. Harriet's, again, hat on religiousness, where she's talking about, unlike, you know, Jews and everybody else, I'm going straight to heaven. And then the lyric and the choir's response lyric about the intellectual reach around, that last one I didn't even think was funny. That one last one fell flat when they delivered it, and then when the chorus does its dial-up version. So really, you get two jokes in that whole thing, and that's my objection. It's not, and it was also so short. That's not what the cold open should be. Like 1 minute of a song. I don't know. It really bummed me out, and I remembered it not liking it, and I continued not liking it.
There's a better version of this that's out there, I suppose, or that should be out there. I did appreciate how kind of self-aware the song was, or like the idea of the song was. And the producer caught doing blow part was that was dang funny. And I was like, oh, is this not as bad as I thought? And then it just kind of like got super boring after that. But yeah,
I did think their outfits were great. I liked them all dressed in white. That was fun.
Mm-hmm. And like it was competently sung, and the whole like conductor and everything, all the music parts were fun, but yeah.
I don't know if you know, for me, I would say a part of my personality is defined by it. So it's that important in my life. And maybe it's very popular there, but I don't know. But there was one of the times Steve Martin hosted SNL in the Victoria Jackson, Chris Farley era.
Good era.
They opened with a song. It was a cold open song. And that's what it felt like this was trying to compete with. And it was nowhere close. He's planning to phone it in, and we can put the link in the show notes because I found it here on YouTube right now. But he's like, it starts with an actual teamster from the show basically saying 5 minutes to air, Mr. Martin. Mm-hmm. And he's like, what? And somebody's like, do you want to run lines, Steve? And he's like, why bother? It's on the cue cards. Like, who cares? And he's going to phone it in. But suddenly he gets inspired and they start doing this song. And it's this huge song and dance number. It starts with just him. And then it's a couple cast members. And it's the entire cast. All the camera guys sing at one point. Mm-hmm. Farley says he's not going to drink until update is through. Okay. But it's so funny. And then it finally gets the final line. And he's like, I made it happen. Now it's concise. I don't remember what the last word is. And then he's like, live from New York, line. And then the cue card guy's pointing right there. It's Saturday Night. And like, that's funny as hell. Yeah. And it was this big, huge number. And the audience couldn't believe this is a week in the making. And like, now we get to see this thing. And this felt like, you see how quickly you and I put together lyrics for theme songs to this show each time there's a new season. But that's a song that's 12 seconds long. Like, this was not national TV ready. So I object.
Yeah, part of it's that we've seen it done so much better. Steve Martin's a great example. The bar is really high. And so seeing something as kind of wimpy as this doesn't quite cut it.
Yeah. I was not impressed. But overall, I liked the episode, just didn't love it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I think the things we liked about it were the things that drew us to the whole show in general. The behind-the-scenes stuff's great. The one-on-one interactions were especially good. I am a little nervous about the romance stuff between Matt and Harriet, because it seems like, I think I even said this in the last episode, like, as long as people don't start acting like idiots, I think we're going to be okay. So if people do, it's not going to be as fun. But there's a lot of seeds getting planted for some good stuff coming up.
Yeah. Yeah. And like, I'm excited. And obviously there is going to be more of this romance stuff. There is going to be more of that thing. But to me, it's a question of how heavy-handed is it going to be, or how believable is it going to be, and all that.
Mm-hmm.
But we'll see. I enjoyed it. I had a good time.
Okay.
Well, good ep. What I think, now episode 3, I'm putting the pressure on, right? Because what I want to know is, how does it compare? Are we going to continue the slight downward decline? Or are we going to reach the heights of the pilot again? We'll find out.
The next one's called the focus group, which just means makes me a little nervous. It's going to get a little navel gazy. People are going to get worked up about the things that don't matter. But who knows? There's going to be some. There's still going to be some good stuff.
Well, I can't wait, Brian. What a pleasure to watch this show with you, and listeners, thanks for watching along with us. Don't forget, rate and review us in Apple Podcasts or whatever you do, and make sure you also go and become a member of The Incomparable at theincomparable.com/members. If you're already a member, you can say to The Incomparable you'd like to throw some of your subscription fees our way, which is so kind of you. So thanks for doing that. And Brian, there's one more thing. I think it's your turn.
You know, all those sound like great recommendations, but folks, we really need you to keep sorking it all week long.
Amen to that, my friend. See, I'm religious like Harriet.